Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Off Air, the podcast. With Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
Yes. How would that go in the booth?
Badly. Go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Natalie Sawyer.
And I'm Gregor Robertson. We're with you twice a week throughout the season for all the best reaction and analysis from some of the best football writers in the business.
And joining us in the studio today, it is sports writer for The Times and The Sunday Times, James Gearbrandt. And just to make life difficult for us, Gregor, we've got another James in the studio. The Times deputy sports editor, James Restall, is here as well. Coming up, we're going to tell you which uncapped English striker Gregor wants at Euro 2020. And we are picking our best Premier League player outside of the top two and discussing whether or not you love or hate the man that may well be described as Marmite, that is Mike Dean. But first, to Anfield. The front page of the game today simply reads, "We're going to win the league." As for the first time, Liverpool fans can sing that the title is coming to Anfield after their 2-0 win over Manchester United. The win continues Liverpool's procession towards their first title in 30 years and extends their lead at the top of the table to 16 points with a game in hand. Now, to make matters worse for United, well, they received the news that Marcus Rashford has sustained a double stress fracture in his back and is facing at least 6 weeks out, according to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. It's been revealed he was carrying a single stress fracture in his back and now has a double stress fracture after the Wolves game, and also has a piece of floating bone in his ankle, which will require surgery, with Rashford reportedly playing through immense pain in recent weeks. So, where does, we'll start with United and this injury to Rashford, Mr. Gearbrandt, I'll come to you. Where does this injury leave Manchester United's season?
It's difficult, isn't it? I think it's obviously a huge blow, the loss of their kind of, their best attacking player this season, frankly. I mean, obviously, given that Paul Pogba has missed so much of the season, probably their most influential player. And it's such a funny one because, you know, United, for all that they haven't really convinced us, you know, United are right in with a shout of that final Champions League place. You know, there's still so much on the line for them, and you know, we'll come on to this, but obviously that kind of, you know, it will be interesting to see what measures they take to cover this injury. Obviously, you do have Anthony Martial, who can play as the centre-forwards. I think he's a very good centre-forwards. And you've got Mason Greenwood, who obviously Solskjaer rates really highly and has been impressive in his, you know, what kind of little we've seen of him. But it's, you know, it's thin in that department if Rashford's, you know, injury is kind of seems to be potentially a complex one and, you know, one that may not kind of heal overnight. So big blow for United, I think.
Yeah, a big blow. Mr. Restall? Should we go with the Mr. Restall, Mr. Gearbrandt? That might be the easiest way to go about this.
Call me Mr. Robertson then.
No, you're going to be Gregor. It's an interesting situation with Rashford because it's been reported he's had long-term back problems for quite a while. As we were saying there, it was revealed that he had a single stress fracture. That's now developed into a double stress fracture. Should he have been playing at all?
Clearly not. And clearly he needs a long period of rest and recuperation. It's why I think Manchester United have to go out and sign someone, even if it's a loan deal, simply to take the pressure off Rashford in terms of rushing himself back. Because, you know, we saw last week how much Solskjaer was desperate to play him to get them over the line against Wolves. But equally, you know, it's Rashford himself wants to, he's the kind of player who wants to be playing in every game as well. And I think just for all parties, he needs to be given the best possible chance to recover and, fingers crossed, be fit for the Euros.
Gregor, how much of a decision for Rashford to play will have come down to the medical team or to the player himself?
I mean, both, but often it does come down to the player, especially as Manchester United have been so stretched in attack. And it kind of, actually, James, you wrote an excellent piece about that, this very subject, only recently, when Paul Pogba, you know, he was kind of spoken about as he had taken advice from his own medical people and perhaps, you know, why is he not playing through the pain barrier, as it appears Rashford has. Well, this is your answer, really. You know, I think when you play through the pain barrier, when you're kind of putting yourself at risk, it is a risk of a longer sort of absence. And I think this is a reminder that actually that's very common. Most players, you know, you very, very rarely are playing at anywhere near 100%. There's always some little issue. And often, you know, the ankle thing, he probably would have waited until the summer and have had cleaned out. But now that he's injured his back as well, you know, you think the degree of kind of pain he's having to go through to play, it's probably not really fair.
It's a cultural thing, isn't it? Remember when, you know, Mauricio Pochettino said that the key to getting Harry Winks to kind of take his game to the next level was, you know, convincing him that he was going to always have a little bit of pain in his ankle and that it was just something that he would have to kind of tolerate and learn to kind of play through. You know, I remember when Jurgen Klopp was talking about Daniel Sturridge and he said he had to learn, you know, the difference between what is big pain and what is only pain, or words to that effect. It's sort of sobering to think that, you know, a lot of the players that we watch every weekend are, you know, are playing through kind of some sort of pain or discomfort on quite a lot of the time.
Yeah. I've got sympathy with that. I mean, I remember doing tearing some cartilage in my knee, and after every game it would swell up to a balloon. I wouldn't train Monday to Thursday, and then, but because we were in a relegation battle, this is when I was at Northampton, and you know, I wanted to play too. I had to play for my future as well. It's slightly different in the lower leagues too. You know, I was out of contract. I played right through to the end of the season, and I got it cleaned out in the summer. Well, I've had managers as well. Pressy, so one time I had an ankle injury, and I was getting injections to play games, just kind of, and it got to a stage where it was too much, and the manager was even out there trying to like mimic kind of block tackles with me, saying, "Come on, try and do this." And I was, "No, look, I'm not fit to play here." Mm. So you do get pressure. Look, this is Manchester United. I was playing for a team in League One at the time. There's different sort of realities there, but I'm sure he's their best attacking player. I'm sure if he says he's willing to play, that's the most important thing even for Manchester United.
And at what point was the threshold for you? At what point did you decide to say I'm not fit to play?
You know, it's really hard to kind of to say that there is a threshold. It's, you know yourself, and that if it's pain that actually is something you can't sort of, it can't escape your mind. It can't be something you kind of get over and focus on and playing. Adrenaline gets you beyond it. If it's always there, or if it's kind of, if it's affecting your performance, is the obvious thing. But there have been times where it's just the kind of the pain, knowing that the pain is always there. If it's too much, you can't forget about it, it affects you, and you have to stop playing, really.
I mean, obviously, the situation that Manchester United find themselves in right now, then, without Rashford, Mr. Gearbrandt, it's funny to have to say that. But anyway, you obviously alluded to the fact that they are light up front. That is in part down to their own doing for failure to bring in a forward option, having lost Romelu Lukaku as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this injury, in a way, is, you could blame even more on the club itself for not thinking forward, planning that they may well have an injury problem with Rashford or another player up front.
Yeah, you're complete. Yeah, I mean, that's completely right. I mean, obviously the decision to let Lukaku go was obviously one that they felt that they could ride out the consequences of that without kind of signing another, you know, senior centre forward. And now they are where they are. And obviously the difficult thing, as everyone always says about doing business in January, is you sort of end up chasing your own tail a little bit. Like, you know, you might end up signing, obviously they would have loved to sign Erling Braut Haaland, but he's gone. And now you sort of end up thinking, oh, you know, do we kind of sign someone who might not necessarily be your first choice, but you kind of feel that you need to cover for the rest of the season. And then obviously, you know, next season rolls around and, you know, Rashford and Martial are both fit and Mason Greenwood has sort of moved on another level. And now you have a slightly kind of, slightly unbalanced squad. So, yeah, it's not. It's obviously not an ideal position that they've left themselves in. Mm. And obviously, and you know, we all know that Lukaku has been doing pretty well at Inter Milan as well, which kind of sorts the wound a little more.
Just a little. But that is the problem in itself, isn't it? With January being such a funny month for transfers. James, I'm looking at you, so you know I'm talking to you. Because in a way, I mean, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has spoken about maybe bringing in a player on loan. I mean, this is Manchester United talking about bringing in players in on loan. What kind of player could be available to Manchester United in January? Bear in mind, they're going to want an experienced striker. They're going to want someone who can hit the ground running. Yet, where could they find someone like that who isn't wanted at the club already?
I mean, it was. I think I was reading recently that Llorente had been offered back to Spurs, you know, as an option. Mm. And you know, I think also today, I think Edinson Cavani's handed in a transfer request. So I mean, you know, but I just looked at other moves that have happened in the past, like Higuain to Chelsea, and it's kind of you really need it to work. Otherwise, it's kind of, you know, you end up with what could be an expensive mistake at the end of it.
Well, on the game itself, a Virgil van Dijk header from a corner gave Liverpool the lead before Mo Salah raced away to seal all 3 points in stoppage time. Could have been a different scoreline had Roberto Firmino's effort not been ruled out by VAR. And the reason that was not given in the end was because David De Gea was fouled by Virgil van Dijk. This has led to a lot of debate on whether or not it was actually a foul. Gregor, let's come to you as our professional defender. Where do you stand on it? Was De Gea fouled by van Dijk?
I think it was, yeah. I know a lot of people are saying the opposite. And they also brought up the recent, I think it was against Everton, when Calvert-Lewin put his arm in De Gea's face as he went to punch it and he turned away. I think this is completely different because he was, as he went to catch the ball, he was the impact kind of sent him backwards. You saw his, you know, De Gea jumped up and then he immediately was sent backwards. I think when you're trying to catch the ball, that's a pretty big obstacle. You know, it wasn't a really kind of clear cut thing. I think it is one of these things that's subjective, and it made me think as well about the reaction of the players around the referee was really really aggressive and kind of right in his face. I mean, we're thinking about whether they should, who should be taking this decision. You know, a lot of people have been saying about going over to see the pitch side monitor and stuff. Imagine after that reaction, him having to go over to the pitch side monitor, the kind of pressure, and to try and overturn his own decision. And even when you saw the referee do that, I think it was Bournemouth versus Norwich, was it, at the weekend?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And there was an assistant coach, I'm kind of going off tangent
it's
here.
Like in the
assistant
Bournemouth,
coach was like, kind of leaning round looking at it.
The screen was like in the Bournemouth dugout, basically.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah.
And, you know, so he was kind of commentating on it as it was happening. So I'm going off tangent here, but I think I was thinking myself in recent weeks that is a kind of, I want him to be the man who makes the decision. The referee, if it's a subjective decision that's kind of split an opinion, I would rather it was him than somebody in Stockley Park. But there's obstacles even to that. It's opened up an absolute minefield, VAR. But I think it's a foul. Like, he came to the right decision in the end.
What I thought was interesting was the fact that Craig Pawson, the on-field referee yesterday, was the VAR who allowed the Everton goal in that match against Manchester United in December. And so I actually think it's kind of, that's a consistency of Pawson's own thinking towards these fouls. And it just shows how subjective these decisions are. Yeah, yeah. And it's a human decision that's being made. It's not the technology. It's the officials interpreting it. And I completely take your point about that would have been a huge call for Pawson to then go over and overturn his own decision, having been, you know, with all those players crowding around him. But I do think for something like that foul, I think it would have been worth him himself having a look at it again and making that decision again. And you know, if he had overturned it, then he would be opening himself up to his own inconsistency, having made that decision last month.
Yeah.
Does anyone think it wasn't a foul?
I don't think it was a foul.
No?
I think the goal should have stood, purely on the basis of the Everton goal standing.
Right. Mr. Gebrandt, where do you sit on this one?
Honestly, I thought it was really marginal. I watched it and I was like, oh, I don't know. I really, I'm really on the fence with this one. What I really dislike is, I really don't like sort of putting a big defender on the goalkeeper at like corners, and you're basically trying to block the goalkeeper. Mm. I think that's a little bit, that is sort of the dark arts really, isn't it? Whereas this one, obviously, it was in a slight, I know, I think it came from a set piece, but it was sort of a couple of phases afterwards. Yeah. It was more kind of open phase of play. I mean, I hate to, the, you know, I don't, I think people get a bit carried away with the sort of eyes on the ball stuff, but I think it was a genuine attempt from Van Dijk to actually make a genuine challenge for the ball.
I'm not sure about that.
Do you not?
Maybe, I think he went up to kind of put him cynical. Off and sent him. But he did. He was clever because it was not. It's not kind of clear.
It didn't sort of look glaring, did it?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought it was, honestly, I thought it was really, 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 really tough decision. Mm. I'm not sure what I'd have, whether I'd have blown my whistle.
But there we are. We've got a yes, a no, absolutely. And a maybe. So, I mean,
all bases covered. Goalkeepers, like on social media and stuff, former goalkeepers saying, I don't think that was a foul.
No. Mm.
I still do that. That's sometimes these decisions.
And there I was thinking you'd be in the defenders' union, and you weren't.
No, I have to say it was a foul. Sorry.
Right. Well, it was another defeat for Manchester United, and there was a heated debate yesterday on TV. I don't know if you saw this one, between Roy Keane and Jamie Carragher over whether Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has done enough to earn more time to turn things around at Manchester United. Question is, would any of you keep Solskjaer on beyond the end of the season? Are you convinced he is the right man to lead the change at United? James?
I think Solskjaer should be replaced in the summer. I think there are better managers out there, and who knows, there may be, you know, more managers may come onto the market in the summer, but I think, you know, there are out-of-work managers out there at the moment that are better than Solskjaer, you know, the likes of Allegri or Marcelino or whoever. But I think with the right appointment, and I frankly haven't reflected on who exactly it should be, I do think with the right appointment that history could actually sort of judge Solskjaer quite kindly. I think if United were to appoint someone whose sort of vision was kind of slightly allied with what Solskjaer has done, but was able to sort of graft, you know, the training ground work of a really kind of elite manager on top of that, so that, yeah, all right, they can play that counter-attacking style that they're really good at, but they also have other ways of beating teams. Then I think that, you know, there may come a time when you actually look back and think, actually, Solskjaer was not a bad kind of bridge manager for that sort of transitional period that they had. But I do think that at the end of this season, his time has probably come to an end.
Well, before we move on from the action at Anfield, why don't we settle a debate that has been raging on Twitter all weekend around this United-Liverpool game. Would the Manchester United Champions League winning side of 2008 beat Liverpool's current team? It's fair to say there's a lot backing Manchester United's 08 team, but maybe they're more United fans than we might think. But James Gearbrandt, where would you stand on this one? Who would have the better team? So Alex Ferguson or Jurgen Klopp?
I just don't think there's any basis
oh,
for thinking that Manchester United would beat this current Liverpool team. Right. I just don't. They're not as good. So that United team in that season won the title with 87 points. Liverpool this season, and they probably won't get to this, but at the current rate they're picking up points, they're on track for 111 points. At this stage of the season, they're the best team ever by points per game in the history of the big five leagues. I mean, it's just... That United team was a great team, but I just don't... I really don't see how you can say that they would beat this Liverpool team.
Anyone care to disagree and think, actually, no, the 08 team, much better?
The silence is deafening.
I know, isn't it? That's not good.
Look, I've got to agree. I think, as I said earlier, they're the kind of most complete Premier League side there's ever been. The most devastating in attack. Look, Manchester United, they had Cristiano Ronaldo. He could win a game on his own sometimes. And they had Ferdinand and Vidic at the back. That's one of the most formidable pairings, defensive pairings that there's ever been in the Premier League. But as I say, I think as a kind of unit and as a functioning 11, I think Liverpool are the best that we've ever seen, really.
I know it's heresy, but I think this Liverpool team are, I think they're better coached than United. And I know.
That is heresy.
But I mean, and that's not a slight on Sir Alex Ferguson, who was obviously just, I mean, he probably remains the greatest manager. But you look at the teams, and I think player by player, the Liverpool team doesn't kind of strike you as being hugely better than that United team. But they're just, you know, in terms of the kind of sheer relentlessness of their results, Klopp's team are more, they're more efficient, and they're just more, as Gregor said, they're more relentless. They appear to be more invulnerable than that Manchester United team.
The only other thing I'd add to this is that that team did a Champions League and Premier League double, and I would not rule out Liverpool doing that this season. And if Liverpool do that this season, I mean, we looked at the earliest point at which Liverpool can actually win the league. They'd only just be out of the round of 16 of the Champions League. They could then focus the whole rest of the back end of the season on purely their Champions League campaign. You know, they're still in the FA Cup. I mean, there's these trophies are not out of reach for Liverpool at all. I think there's been a big narrative that, you know, oh, well, Manchester City can now focus on the Champions League. Well, are they going to win it with that defence? I don't think so. And I honestly think, you know, I would not be surprised if Liverpool reached the final again.
Well, why don't we do a comparison of the players from the Manchester United 2008 side and Liverpool's current team. I want you to just tell me who you would rather have. So, Gregor, we'll start with you. In goal, Van der Sar or Alisson?
I think I'll go Van der Sar.
Why?
I don't know. I think it's blooming tight. But everyone, even a lot of Manchester United players who were long-term Manchester United players who played with him and Peter Schmeichel would pick him. They've picked him in the past. I've heard them say it, and it's, I think that says quite a lot. I think he's one of the best that there's ever been.
Mr. Gearbrand. Where's Brown? Or Trent Alexander-Arnold?
I mean, come on, this isn't the toughest decision.
I think
decision,
this is a gimme, isn't it?
I mean,
this is not right.
It's got to be Trent, hasn't it? I mean, he's redefining what a right back can do. I mean, yeah.
Oh, Wes Brown was unlucky. Wes, he was unlucky to be up against Alexander-Arnold. Mr. Estrell, Vidic or Van Dijk?
Really tough one, this. Both absolute warriors of defenders. But I'd have to go for Van Dijk. Purely, I know when Vidic came to United, he had a transformative impact as well. But I just think the way that Van Dijk, for me, really has been the catalyst for what has made Liverpool go from being a very good team to a great team. And I think that's, for me, I have to go Van Dijk.
Okay, so that's one half of the Manchester United 2008 centre-back partnership that Gregor was bigging up. Ditched. But we could resolve that by bringing in Ferdinand against Gomez.
Rio Ferdinand.
Ah.
But if you put Rio Ferdinand against Van Dijk, it would be Van Dijk. I think Van Dijk
is
becoming the best. the best centre-back we've seen really in the Premier League era.
Okay, let's go to the other full-back, wing-back position. Evra Robertson, Mr. Gearbrand.
I think this is a tighter one for sure. I mean, I probably would lean towards Robertson.
Mm.
You can't look beyond his creative output. You know, I think he's a better crosser of the ball than Patrice Evra was. But I think that one is tight, and I do, you know, Evra was a great player.
Okay, let's move into midfield for Mr. Restall. Hargreaves against Fabinho.
This is a slightly tricky one, because I don't think I think Fabinho is a wonderful midfield player, and I think he's improved steadily throughout his Liverpool career, and I think he's only going to get better. And I think, you know, if I was picking between the two now and having someone that could sort of anchor that midfield, I'd probably go Fabinho.
Okay, so Fabinho gets the nod. Gregor, Carrick or Henderson?
I mean, you've got to judge them purely on a head-to-head basis here. It's Michael Carrick. He's a better footballer. But you're looking at Jordan Henderson has been remarkable this year, and he's a leader in that Liverpool team. So there's other characteristics, other traits, and you wouldn't say necessarily that Carrick would fit into Liverpool's team better,
mm-hmm.
but Carrick's a better footballer, so it's him.
Okay, Carrick, gets your vote. Mr. Gerbrandt, Scholes, Wijnaldum.
Yeah, it's got to be Paul Scholes.
Okay.
It?
Yes. Any more to add to that as to why? Is it just that obvious?
No brainer.
Well, you've had some gimmies, haven't you?
I have, yeah. I think Scholes is just a much more prolific scorer from midfield. It has to be Paul Scholes.
Okay. Mr. Restall, Tevez or Mane?
Tevez, the more prolific player. But in terms of who's going to get me out of my seat and do things that are just pure brilliance and exciting and electric, I have to go for Mane.
Okay. Gregor, Rooney or Firmino?
Well, this is similar in that Wayne Rooney and his pomp, I think, is a better footballer than Bobby Firmino. But in Liverpool's front three, again, it doesn't function with the same without him. But going head-to-head, I think Wayne Rooney.
Okay, right. Wayne Rooney gets your...
So that's 5-5.
That is 5-5. So this is the deciding one. And actually, I don't know how easy this one is after all the easier ones we've given you, Mr. Gerbrandt. Cristiano Ronaldo against Mo Salah.
It's important.
This defines everything.
I mean, if it's, you know, who is the better player? I mean, it's Ronaldo, isn't it?
Right.
That's just... Ronaldo is one of, you know, he's one of the two best players of his generation. And frankly, I think Ronaldo is probably among the top five footballers of all time who have ever lived. We're judging Man United, Cristiano Ronaldo, aren't we?
Which is
arguably not quite the finished article, but he was still, even back then, I think he won his first Ballon d'Or when he was at Manchester United, didn't he?
With his stepovers and spaghetti in his hair.
Yes.
All that.
I think Mo Salah is obviously, he's outstanding. He's a brilliant, brilliant player. But I just think Ronaldo was operating at a slightly higher level.
So you've gone for Ronaldo, which means it would be the Manchester United team of 2008.
That is the head-to-head battle. What we said as well, that as a collective, Liverpool, still somehow with having all these stars in their team, it's still more all about the collective for Liverpool, which I think has been proven.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, Tony Cascarino in the game today has explained why he thinks Wolves' Adama Traore is the best player in the Premier League outside of Liverpool and Manchester City squads. The Spanish speed demon has lit up the Premier League this season with cutting edge added to his incredible displays of pace and power. He has 4 goals and 6 assists in the league, helping Wolves to sixth in the table, including a man of the match display on Saturday as Wolves came from 2-0 down to win 3-2 at Southampton. Cascarino believes this season he has eclipsed Wilfried Zaha as the best player outside Liverpool and City then. But do we agree with Tony Cascarino's choice? Mr. Gerbrandt, who would be your best player outside of Liverpool and Manchester City that we've seen so far?
I mean, if the question is who is the best player who doesn't play for Liverpool or Manchester City, I think you're probably looking at N'Golo Kanté or Paul Pogba.
Right.
But I do think that questions like this should have an element of form. current performance. I don't think, I mean, obviously, you know, Pogba has been injured for a lot of this season, and I don't think Conte is having a vintage season. Someone that I will point to, I think, is brilliant.
This is going to be my one, I know it.
Possibly the best player in their position in the Premier League is Wilfred Ndidi.
Yeah, that's it.
Sorry.
That's fine.
Damn you, Mr. Greenbrand.
But go on.
I looked up some statistics, which I think are really interesting. N'Golo Kanté, in his Player of the Year winning season, 2016-17, made 3.7 tackles a game and 2.4 interceptions. Wilfred Ndidi this season, 4.5 tackles per game, 2.9 interceptions. I think Wilfred Ndidi is the best pure defensive. And it's slightly unfair comparison because obviously we know that since that Conte is not, he's not a sort of purely defensive midfielder and he doesn't play in the deepest, he doesn't play that sort of deep lying pivot role anymore. So they're not quite, they're not quite the same type of player anymore. In terms of an absolute pure defensive midfielder, I think Ndidi is the best in the Premier League.
Okay. Well, Gregor, that was your choice as well. Is he? Do you think he's really underrated then in the Premier League?
Yeah, well, I think that's kind of slowly changing. But I think the other thing to say is I think he probably improves every other team in the league, really. Especially like Manchester City are relying on having Fernandinho in defence at the moment, so I think he improves every other team, and that's a you know, the part of the thing that Tony Cascarino was writing about was the most dangerous player. So if, in that sense, I actually still think the player he overlooked was Zaha. I think Wilfred Zaha is still on a consistent basis of being almost unplayable. Traore has stepped up remarkably this season, but he's still got to do it for a full season and beyond, and I'm sure he looks like he's maturing as a player and he's making the right decisions more often. But Wilfred Zaha still can be at his best unplayable, so I would go for him.
Okay, James.
Yeah, I was going to answer this in terms of Tony sort of saying the most dangerous, and for me, one big factor of danger is when I'm watching Football Focus on Saturday and waiting to see who scored when a team's goal comes up. And it's Jamie Vardy every single week for Leicester City. And mainly because of the way that he's become so economical in his movements and in his shot conversion. If you're taking danger as being a lethal forward, I mean, you know, he's one of the most lethal players outside of those top two teams. And an honourable mention for Jack Grealish.
Yes. I think if any team relies on somebody, it's Aston Villa. That is for sure. Right. The Everton striker, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, was tipped for an England call-up after he scored his 11th goal of the season as the Toffees fought back to draw at West Ham. The 22-year-old grabbed a spectacular 44th-minute diving header after Mason Holgate had flicked on Lucas Digne's corner. Now, Mr. Gearbrand, I know you've written about Calvert-Lewin for the Times. What have you made of his season so far?
He's making the leap, isn't he? You know, this is a player who has registered. He's I think in his previous three seasons in the Premier League, he's got one goal, four goals, six goals, and he's already got 9 in 21 matches this season, including I think 6 in his last 8, and he's just. He is making that step up. He's more clinical. I think he's almost kind of doubled his conversion rate. He's taking better shots. He's getting into better positions. And I do think, I don't know if I had to write my Euro 2020 squad down now, whether he'd be in it. But I do think he's an interesting option because he offers something a little bit different. He wins a lot of aerials, and he just offers that dimension that the other strikers that sat at Southgate's disposal probably don't really. Maybe Tammy, but probably not quite to the same extent. And and of course he's young. He's probably if that final spot, for example, came down to Dominic Calvert-Lewin or Danny Ings. I think Danny Ings is brilliant and, you know, I don't think anyone would begrudge him that final spot in the squad if indeed it did come to that. But Calvert-Lewin obviously is a slightly more, he'd be a slightly more developmental pick. He's someone that you could imagine taking to future major tournaments.
And that's Southgate places great weight in that as well.
So. And I think he just offers something. He offers something that's a bit more different than Danny Ings. But it may be that Southgate feels that he, you know, he doesn't want someone to come in and offer a different dimension. He is very set on the way that he wants the team to play. But I think that Calvert-Lewin can kind of, I think he's versatile.
Yeah, I think he's an all-rounder. I've said this for a while on this podcast. I think he's been brilliant for a couple of seasons in his performances, and he's great with his back to goal. He can stretch defences as well. He's, as James says, he's brilliant in the air. His work rate is phenomenal. And, you know, there was little clips kind of packages when he kind of led from the front in that Duncan Ferguson mini resurgence, and he was really leaving them on defenders again. Mm. Someone I look watch him play, and I think I would hate to play against him because he works tirelessly at closing you down, and he's not scared to leave his foot in there and then. And he's had quite an interesting path too. He signed from Sheffield United in 2016, but he'd already been out on loan to Stalybridge Celtic and Northampton Town under Chris Wilder. So he's not a kind of Cosseted Academy product either. I think that shows in his game. He's got a rough edge to him. But the main thing is, he's added goals. Mm. That was always the thing for him. And striker's job is to score goals, and he's done that. So I think if he can continue to score, then he's definitely, I would put him above, as James says, above Ings, and as the next pick for England.
How many number nines would you have in the squad? Sort of out and out.
That's a really interesting question. I think
if you're looking at, you know, I assume Kane's fit and...
Well, I think that's a big assumption. Mm. But, I mean, yeah, obviously, if Kane's fit, he goes. Mm. Tammy's got to go, I think.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it's really interesting after that whether you take another outright number nine. I did have a go at jotting down what my squad would be the other day. I can't remember if I picked another.
in your notes section.
Literally, in my spare time, this is how sad I am.
It's because you knew one day you'd be on this podcast.
Exactly. One day I would return. I vowed I would return to the game podcast. Well, obviously, I had Rashford as well. It depends. I mean, he's sort of a bit of a hybrid player, isn't he? Mm. But I don't think you need more than three. It's tricky, no. Isn't it? Mm.
Because if you have two, you know, if you have three, then as you say, Rashford can play both. So
yeah,
as long as Rashford's one of them, then and three is definitely enough.
I think Kane, Abraham, and Rashford would be enough, as Gregor says. And in that case, you probably wouldn't need Ings or Calvert-Lewin. It's if Kane isn't fit that you're looking for another option.
Well, while we're on the subject then of players forcing their way into Gareth Southgate's Euro 2020 plans, is there anyone else you think on form right now that Southgate should be looking at, should be considering for this squad, Mr. Restall?
I think we did a bit of analysis in the Sunday Times around the week of the last qualifiers, and I think on average six players drop out of the final qualifying squad and are replaced by six newcomers. And it's not quite six newcomers because it's two or three have been out with injury that would normally have been in. So realistically, I think we're actually only looking at two or three places of genuine kind of people coming from nowhere, people like Alexander-Arnold into the World Cup squad. There's normally only one or two that kind of really do surprise us.
My left field shout for most indispensable player that England can least afford to get injured between now and the end of the season is Ben Chilwell. England have problems at left back if Ben Chilwell is out injured, because you've got Danny Rose, who is not even making the Tottenham matchday squad at the moment. All right, he's a sort of, you know, he's someone who you think of, he's a veteran player, and you know, maybe Southgate feels that he can trust him, but it's not ideal, is it? Is, you know, the form that he's coming into the tournament with. Luke Shaw, you know, hasn't been getting in the, I know he was playing at sort of left centre back yesterday, but you know, Brandon Williams has been keeping out of the team, you know, on quite a few of Manchester United's matches. I don't think Matt Target has had a particularly good season in an Aston Villa backline that is really struggling.
Would you not add Brandon Williams then?
I think I don't know. It's such a difficult one, because that would be a real wild card pick, and you know, he's very, you know, he's very lightly raced. There's, you know, we haven't seen a lot of him. That backup left back slot is tough. I honestly don't know who I would go for. I think
He's a possibility, though.
I think Williams has got a chance
because James says that is an area of weakness. But on the counter, on the other side, you know, I would say Reece James should be in the reckoning, but because they have such a ridiculous choice to make, even at right back with Alexander Arnold, Wan-Bissaka, I would say Reece James is a better footballer than Wan-Bissaka, but it's going to depend on how Southgate sets the team up. There's no guarantee even that Alexander Arnold's going to start, because he's often, you know, he's even played Kieran Trippier still, and you know, Kyle Walker's still around. So I think Reece James is someone who will be battling for that spot in the future. Definitely, he's a fantastic talent.
Okay, well, this weekend saw a unique milestone in the Premier League in the world of refereeing. When Mike Dean took charge of Arsenal against Sheffield United, he became the first man to referee 500 Premier League games. He's certainly given us some funny moments over the years. There are compilations of those moments on YouTube from the time he let the ball run through his legs to his no-look cautions and puzzled looks at players. This season, he even pretended to keep the match ball from Sergio Aguero after his hat-trick against Chelsea. And as former Premier League referee Peter Walton writes in The Game today, he is the Marmite referee. You love him or hate him. So, James Restall, do you love or hate Mike Dean?
Oh, you've got to love Mike Dean. You've got to love Mike Dean. He's he brings a sort of entertainment value to refereeing, you know, and it all adds to the spectacle of football. I thought it was quite funny as he was being presented with his award, and they announced him. There was sort of boos from the crowd, and it's kind of it's the pantomime role of the referee. You know, I think he's great, and you know, those brilliant scenes at Tranmere last season were just excellent, and they're just, you know, it's another great thing.
Gregor, what's your view on Mike Dean? Love or loathe?
Neither. He's but look, football's it's too serious a lot of the time, and he's someone who kind of brings a touch of humour and lightens the mood sometimes. But the main thing is, you know, you can do it all you want as long as you're a good referee and you make the right decisions, and he is one of the best referees. He has been. That's why he's gone for so long. And I often think that the best referees often do have a bit of an ego as well, because they like the power. And you'd much rather that than someone who is kind of don't have the courage of their convictions and is a little bit kind of lack of confidence. It's the same as playing football. You've got to be the guy in the middle of the pitch in a stadium full of 60,000 people and millions on TV. You've got to have some confidence to make certain calls. So I often think that's why a lot of referees do have an ego, and he's certainly one of them. Referee, when I broke my leg, kind of possibly saved my career. And that when the tackle was made, and he saw my leg at a kind of right angle, and I fell on top of the guy who made the tackle. Oh. And obviously I'm in a bit of a state. And he rushed over immediately and said, "Don't move," to the player I was lying. You could easily imagine him throwing me off. And they said, people said afterwards, the medical staff, that if I had moved, then it could have damaged nerves and possibly I might not have played again.
Oh my goodness.
So that referee, his name is Carl Boyson, he sort of perhaps saved my career, and then he also sent me a really nice card afterwards, kind of wishing me the best for the future and that kind of thing. So they're not all bad, these refs.
No, not at all. Well,
I'm tearing
incredible.
Up here.
I know, but that is a lovely story. As you say, they're not all bad, but come on, there must have been some bad. I mean, what about that? Are they sometimes too matey? Because I imagine that there might be, and you think, hang on, I don't play with you. Why are you calling me whatever your nickname might be?
We were discussing that earlier, weren't we, about if a ref kind of calls me Robbo or something. Oh, I think, no. Come on, I don't, you know, we're not friends, I don't know you, pal. And that's the thing about the ego again. I think they like to be the guy with the power in the middle of the pitch and trying to be your friend, trying to be part of the game, trying to be slightly too much a part of the game, perhaps.
That's I'm sometimes start calling happens. You Robbo now.
That's been known. just not a referee. I think we're on that level.
Well, as we were saying then, Mike Dean celebrating 500 games refereeing, which is some feat, that is for sure. That is it for now. Many thanks to our guests today, James Restall and James Gearbrand.
Remember, you can subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times to enjoy award-winning journalism online and on your smartphone or tablet.
It's just £1 a week for an 8-week trial. Search The Times subscription for more information. And we'll be back on Thursday.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.